Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to P4P Real Talk. Sorry for the delay that we're having this evening. We've been experiencing a few technical difficulties, but hopefully everything is on the up and up now, and we are getting ready to kick off what we're hoping is going to be another spine-tingling show. But before we can do that, this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on, as well as a vehicle to drive your goals, like a Mack truck through ice cream, and since I've got the promo, it's going to be chocolate ice cream tonight. Check us out at p4pmuscle.com, and now let's talk. Kaylin, tell me that you are on the other end of this line. And it sounds like Kaylin is not. So hopefully. Sure. Here you are. Woo!
Good. Yes.
Oh.
Yay. Right here, yes.
Good.
And I was snickering at your comment. Yeah, how about that?
Breathing the sigh of relief. Breathing the sigh of relief. All right, well, good. Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm here. Our listeners hopefully are still here. We're a little bit tardy,
yes,
so we apologize. But we are here. We are here. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine, and also as just a little information out there, for the ladies and gentlemen that do listen to our show on their iPhones or whatever telephones, your smartphone that you're using, please put it into the charger so you can use it after you're done with the show, because a lot of you are reminding me that we do have an hour-long show, and it does take a lot of your power of your battery. So just plug those things into the chargers, into your carports, or whatever you need to do. But please get to enjoy your phone after you enjoy our little show.
Yes, and if for some reason you do run out of battery, you can always download a show later to play as many times as you want, whenever you want. So all hope is not lost if that happens. All right, so we have got a great gal calling in tonight, Jennifer Thum. She's going to be joining us about 7:30. So until then, though, you've been a pretty busy guy today. You've been checking out Fit Body U. You've been doing interviews. You've been getting some perspectives on athletes to watch in 2017. So why don't you fill us in on all of this good stuff that's been going on for you today?
Well, if anybody knows natural bodybuilding, they know that the guy that knows just about everything, I call him the Rain Man of natural bodybuilding, and because his knowledge of names and competitors and just going back for decades, like the top 10 for each year is just insane. So I stopped in to talk with Mike Superhuman Newman, and I said, we talk about so many things, but most of the time we don't talk about who was the best of a certain respective year. We hear about who's winning, but nobody really talks about the best competitor, male or female, in any category, because we really don't discuss it. I mean, it's basically, okay, this person won, and that's it. Or this person won the show. We can list who won the shows of the respective years, but at the end of the year, there's always that question of who was number one. And so he basically was giving a little insight because he's a judge. He's also been around bodybuilding for so long that he would know how to judge and how to, you know, really see the different dynamics of what makes the best the best. And so we just did a breakdown of that, and we did part one this morning because for some reason, I guess today just wasn't the day for technology. It decided to take a dump on me, so I'll try again when I get to see him tonight, and we'll find out who's going to be the best of 2017, since we already did the breakdown of who is the best for 2016. And we're also going to cover the amateur side as well on tonight's interview.
You know, and that's actually kind of tough to gauge, I would think, sometimes, because not every athlete competes every year. You know, some take longer off seasons than others. Sometimes they compete in several shows. Sometimes it's just one. So it's, I think in this sport in general, it's kind of hard to maybe get that big picture and that perspective. And if you're not watching every show, then that's really hard to have that perspective. So I think it's that's probably why a lot of people don't talk about it, like on a who's number one in a given year or over time, because it's just hard to gauge.
Yeah, and that's the part of the gist of it, is because we don't really cover this much on a yearly basis, because like you said, you know, granted, we didn't see Kiyoshi Muni, he's retired, so, you know, there was that void that was filled at the Natural O, and then you had Moji Alua, who hadn't been stepping on stage on the male side when we're talking about men's bodybuilding, who are just some of the top names, and Cleveland Thomas did more NPC shows and not competing on the natural stages this year. So, you know, there was that void of who was going to be number one from the natural bodybuilding. Not that these gentlemen aren't naturals, but I'm saying because they haven't been in the arena that we're used to seeing them, there was that void that was created. So what happens now? And we were covering mm-hmm. those names, but then it starts the dynamic of, like you were saying, since we're not looking for an actual number one for the year, nobody really engages in that topic the way we should, because natural bodybuilding has a lot of top athletes, but we're not really giving them their just due by simply saying they won this show. Because, you know, all right, usually because we don't cover it, like you're saying, and it's kind of embarrassing when you think about it, that natural bodybuilding has been around this many years, and we still don't have an actual number one for the year, I don't know a good word to use, because we aren't where we're supposed to be when having this kind of topic. There should be an actual number one, because we have big shows on the natural community side. And because of that, we get the best of the best that show up for that year. Like you said, not every year has every top name, but there are years that has top competitors. And, you know, we could talk about the Minnesota Mayhem. We could talk about the Kansas City Classic. We could talk about, on the amateur side, the Natural Southern States Classic. We could talk about so many, the World, the FEC World. All these have great competition, but at the end of the year, who's going to be number one? And like you said, because we're not speaking in the way we should, we don't really have an answer yet. And I said, you know, so I was thinking, well, I'll sit down with Mike and we'll see if we can hash something out where this doesn't have to go moving forward, where we're still stuck with this dilemma.
Yeah, I mean, and it's great to even start that conversation, because the other part of it that jumps in my mind then is, if you're going to try to summarize the best of the best in a given year, you know, what criteria are we basing that on? Is it just straight wins?
Yeah.
Is it just, you know, even though they didn't take first, they have the best improvement, and, you know, or is it based on potential, or what is it? You know, and at this point, it just comes down to who's walking away with the most, you know, either first place placements or even just top five, you know, and how consistent are they? As they can be, again, understanding that not everybody competes in the same organization or the same number of shows in a given year. So very interesting. I did, before your camera failed on you, I did get to hear, though, a couple, you know, technology and real talk. We go rounds with that.
We do. We really do.
But, you know, 2017 is going to be our year, Kaylin. Little glitch today, a little bump in the road today, but 2017 is going to be our year with technology. But one thing that Newman did say that struck me is he was talking about in men's bodybuilding and running down who stood out to him in 2016. And, of course, he talks about Marcel Johnson, and he's always a standout. But then he also talks about Marcel Roberts and a couple other names that are escaping me, right, probably remember them. But what struck me was that he said, you know, Marshall Johnson is always phenomenal. He's always the best condition on stage, but he appeared to have lost some size. And if Marshall's going to continue to compete, especially against the level of up-and-comers that are hitting the stages these days, he's really going to have to hang on to as much size as possible, which kind of goes back to a point you made as far as the direction of bodybuilding. Where is it going? Is it going towards conditioning or is it going towards size? So I guess I really have two questions I'm going to point towards you, Kaylin. One is,
mm-hmm.
what do you think about that statement? And then two, you know, where do you think bodybuilding is going for males? Specifically, we can get to females in a little bit, but specifically, is it leaning more towards conditioning or is size going to be able to hang in there? But first question first, Marshall Johnson, what do you think about that? Is he going to need to put on more size in order to stay competitive?
Well, that basically bookends the second question as well, so we'll just go try to tackle both in a good sort of way. And what I would say to that is Marshall has been more than conditioned, and I think that a lot of the size that has been missing, if you want to use that word, is that he's realizing that they are leaning towards a leaner look when it comes to
mm-hmm.
the pros and how they're stepping on stage, which I think takes away from bodybuilding. But I think there's an innate fear because of so many people complaining about how the naturals look with the size that they have, that they're always questioned on if they are natural. And it's surprising to me that we would even engage in that thinking, knowing what a natural body can look like. I mean, if you truly go back to the roots, to the very roots of natural bodybuilding, there is a man named Eugene Sandow, which is basically considered the pioneer of natural bodybuilding, back when it was just bodybuilding, because there was no other such thing as enhanced, the enhanced arena. And he had a physique that was basically like the Grecian statues or the Roman Greek gods of that basically statuesque era of the Herculean look. And this man was nothing but natural because, you know, drugs just didn't exist back then in that way, shape, and form. So if you look at this man, and, you know, if anybody wants to know, I'll post a picture on it of him and how he looked, and there's just no question about that. And then as far as going to the leaner side, I think there's that look that everyone has been bragging about since Skip LaCour, when he was incredibly lean. And he was doing it where, it made the enhanced arena very jealous because they were taking the diuretics and the other things that was basically doing much harm to their bodies. And here's a man that's basically stepping on stage without those things and before it was even popular, and he's basically blowing them away on stage. So I think mm-hmm. there's that combination of lean. But like you said, it is bringing about I hate to say it this way, but I can't think of a better way right now, an undersized look of leanness where you used to have the full muscle bellies and a certain amount of a size. Now it's incredibly super lean, and the size is basically being put on the back burner.
Well, it'll just be something that we'll continue to watch and see how things go. I think, you know, coaching plays a role in that as far as how that trend rolls out to some degree. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, just very interesting. The sport continues to evolve, and these are just all things that, you know, everyone's going to have to keep an eye on and take into consideration as they're prepping and, you know, developing the packages that they're bringing to the stage. So, I know you're going to get that first video posted in time, but then also you're going to have a second shot tonight and talk more about the amateurs. So we will keep our eye open for the rest of the predictions that are coming this way. And for any of our listeners, if you guys have favorites that stood out in 2016, let us know. Let us know who you think is the best of the best across any of the categories out there, because we would love to be able to get that information in and then share that back out with everyone too.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, I think we are ready to bring on our guest for this evening's roll call edition of P4P Real Talk. We've got Ms. Jennifer Thum with us, and she is the power behind Raw Strength and Fitness and also a natural competitor. Jennifer, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We're good. We had a few little technical bumps in the road earlier tonight, but we are here and excited that you
Excellent.
Could make it. The last time we tried to have you on the show, a little snow got in the way. Major snowstorm, actually.
Yeah, you're going to have that in the state of Vermont.
Oh, yeah, for
More
sure. Even though
approaches.
It's been a mild winter. Yeah, no doubt. So we're happy we were able to get you rescheduled and get you back on. What we would love is for you to give a little introduction, a little background on yourself so our listeners have an idea of who they're hearing from tonight.
Sure. So I own Raw Strength and Fitness. So it's a business that kind of came about with me being a trainer and I grew up over the last 5 or 6 years. And I became an athlete, kind of a functional training athlete at that point those 2 years ago, and really got into CrossFit and really got into the functional training and strength and conditioning of athletes versus strict bodybuilding or anything of the sort. So, of course, with all the tension on the CrossFit affiliation and functional training affiliation, you really have to be careful how you word things. So we came up with a very, very short, easy term to remember, which is RAW, and we called that, that's what we ended up calling the functional training I was teaching. So it kind of stuck over the years, and I've recently, on the last, well, in September of 2016, acquired a business here in Vermont, which was already existing and had been in existence for quite some time, actually. In fact, a UFC, retired UFC athlete actually owned it at one point in time and sold it, and then I bought it from the person he had sold it to. So Raw Strength and Fitness kind of just seemed the way of the wind, so to speak. It kind of was just one of those things where it just seemed right to name our business that. And yeah, I spent some time doing a lot of functional training, working on strength and conditioning as an athlete, and then kind of dipped a little bit into what I was anticipating to be the bodybuilding sector a little bit. Did that, didn't really work out well for me just because I just kept getting hurt. But I guess from what I understand, that's part of when you use your body as one whole unit and then you start sectioning it off in a very aggressive way. And obviously with the nutritional barriers that you come across with prep and whatnot, those things started to really damage me as an athlete. So I stepped out of it for a bit and got into women's skeleton. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, so you have your Winter Olympic Games, you have, you know, your bobsled and your luge, and you have your skeleton. And skeleton happens to be when you're face first.
Oh, thank God. After you talk about a bad prep, I was wondering.
Well, that's coming. So that's next. No, I'm just kidding. So I got into that really aggressively. And because I was older, that generally are seeking some younger athletes with very advanced athleticism in the natural sector as well, because part of the USBSF, which stands for the U.S. Bobsled Skeleton Federation, you have to be a natural athlete. In fact, you're tested regularly and whatnot. So with that said, I got really involved with that, loved it, and did that for a couple of years, and then found myself in a position where I was traveling all over the place. I was picked up by a Subaru and a local car business in the Adirondacks, New York region, McBride Automotive, and they sent me all over the place to slide, and it was great, but I came back to some injuries. So I said, all right, what's going to happen here? And I reached out to, I'm sure you'll know the name when I say it, I reached out to some friends of mine who are in the bodybuilding and have been into bodybuilding for quite some time and said, hey, if you were going to pick a coach, and you were just going to say, you know, it's all or nothing, who would you go with? And so they gave me two names, and very respected both of their opinions. And so I picked Cliff Wilson.
Okay.
So Cliff Wilson,
yep, we're familiar.
Is, yep. So Cliff Wilson, great man, great coach. I buckled up with him and trained in, he did my nutrition and whatnot, mostly the nutrition piece. The training I kind of had a I have a pretty good eye for that. So had that kind of underway and worked with Cliff for just over a year. And when it came down to the metabolic rehab that my body needed to go through, I mean, when you go through being a fast twitch athlete and you try to kind of turn that notch down, there's a lot of psychological components that come along with that, right? So no cardio is a problem for me, which now I'm fine with it. But so there's certain things, right, that you just have to change. And Cliff really was a great coach and he's a great coach and really kind of said, hey, you know, you need to step out of yourself here and what are you really looking at doing, because you look great and you're telling me this. And so we worked together for about a year and got me really close. We did a metabolic rehab through the summer and the fall and the winter, and then we started to break down for prep. And in April, well, let's see, January, February, March. So March, I was looking at getting on stage at the end of April.
I love that countdown.
That's how the countdown, I know. Like, everything's in months, right? Everything we do is in seasons. So we're like, what day is it? What month is it? Mm-hmm. Where are we? How many weeks out are we? Everything's counted down like that. But in March, I ended up having to have surgery. So I was about six weeks out. You know, plus being my biggest cheerleader and really supporting me and you know, some friends here at home. And we sort of needed to refeed me, which that's always fun, right? So we like that. And came out of surgery strong as hell, but didn't want to go backwards again. So I was like, I'm 5'3", and, you know, 8%, 9%, 10% body fat looks great on me at 120 pounds, but I've never – I don't know what to do because I'm breaking down now because my body's so messed up a little bit. So – I took the summer off and did some metabolic again to refeed myself and get myself healthy again. And coming off of being able to, you know, back squat your 225 and power clean your 160 and doing all those very explosive, heavy, fast movements, I was at the point where I couldn't, I was just damaged. My knees were really bad again. That breakdown of the sectional training really, really didn't do a body good for me. So I said, all right, let me go ahead and just start over again because it seems like that's my pattern here. So metabolically in awesome, amazing shape. Training was right up to par. Everything was getting great. Training was doing really well, is doing really well. And then I was working for corporate America at the time. So I was all over the place and traveling. And I was coaching some of the junior team for the bobsled skeleton side and doing a lot of strength and conditioning for some New York State government contracts and whatnot. So I was definitely very present in the training atmosphere. And so I said, you know, what am I doing to myself? You know, what's going on here? I've got this body dysmorphic mindset, you know, because that's what we get, right? We train all through these layers of metabolic damage, metabolic rehab. You know, small, skinny fat, strong. I mean, we go back and forth with all of these different visions of who and what we are. And so I said, what the hell am I doing? Like, I haven't, you know, this is probably a little bit TMI, but as a 34-year-old female, like, I haven't had a period in 2.5 years. Like, what's going on with me? Like, what's happening to me internally that I can't heal my body, you know?
This is real talk.
So,
shame, girl.
Yeah, it's real. So it's that's exactly what was happening. And I'm going, what is going on here? And the psychosis, like the psychological components to that body dysmorphia mindset. And, you know, when I was working with Cliff, Cliff was like, hey, you know, you're kind of a red flag right now. Like you're, and I look back at pictures from when I was training with, you know, and he was doing my nutrition and he was right on. He was a great coach. Like he was right there for me, answered my questions, did everything he needed to do. And he did warn me that this could happen. And I was like, okay, then I've been warned. This is all this is. Let's get back to training, you know. So shoved it off. And there we go. But at the same time, it's really, it's damaged me. It's damaged me, not just the psychological piece, but it's worn me down physically. You know, the back and forth training. I've had 11 orthopedic surgeries from the way down. My knees are just destroyed from sliding. My knees are a wreck. So symmetry has been a huge piece for me because every time I'd get hurt, my driving leg on the left would have to have surgery, and then of course my right side looks smaller. And I mean, it's just, it's been a back and forth battle on the bodybuilding sector. And I said, you know, I really got to help figure this out for people. So I bought the gym in September, and we're up here in what I like to call Berry Country, and I'm going to leave it like that because there's this amazing, amazing bodybuilding coach here in this area, and I just, I mean, he's just amazing. He's a great competitor. He's got a great physique. I mean, I just can't even go on enough about him. He breaks everything down to such a molecular level when it comes down to the science and the nutrition and the training pieces of bodybuilding. And he has a lot of clients in this area. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, you know, I'm really injured. What can we do about the symmetry? Because he could see me every day. He lives here in Vermont. So we started working on that stuff with him. And lo and behold, my body it's starting to get stronger, and we're working on a lot of the components that keep me where I need to be. But I'm really feeling bodybuilding it's a beautiful sport. And I was listening to the conversations that you were having prior to me coming on, and there's so many things that just simply as an observer and someone who has not stepped on stage but has been so close to doing it and gone through the pros, the cons, the ups and the downs of the psychological components and the metabolic components and the training too, because I mean, I'm a gym junkie. Like I mean, I own a gym because I spend most of my life in one, so it made sense. But it was so interesting to hear when you were talking about the size and whatnot, because I deal with a lot of these bikini competitors in this area, and they're like, Jen, you know, I really want to have, you know, you hear those big names like Cass Martin, you know, hear those big names like her and Nicole Wilkins, of course, you know, East Olympia, and they're like, oh, I just really want to get bigger, but I don't want to get, you know, don't want to get any smaller. I want to get bigger, but I don't want to, you know, get bigger. It's like, you got to make up your mind, people. You know, you can't, you know, and I tell a lot of them, I actually have one that, so I guess my biggest role in my gym probably is motivator, but one of the things I've said to one of the competitors was, you know, she said to me, I shouldn't compete this year because I competed last year and I'm not gaining weight that my coach wanted me to gain, and I don't really know, it's just tiny, tiny little bikini competitor, beautiful girl. And she just looked at me, she's like, well, I'm just going to do it anyway. And I looked at her and I said, the only reason that you're doing this right now is because you think that you're going to win. And the reason you didn't win last year was because you had Nicole Fitzpatrick there and she beat you. But you got to remember something, Alex. There's always going to be another Nicole. You never compete.
Yeah.
Corey Lozier is a pro bodybuilder, and he happens to be a friend of mine, and he's here in the Vermont area as well. And we've had this conversation, him and I, and I said to Alex, I said, listen, competitors compete to be better than what they were. They don't go in to be the same as what they did and where they were and what they've done. Those are people who want attention in my book. People who compete to be better than they were the year before, the years before, they take the time necessary to fuel their bodies properly and build and grow in whichever way that might be, whether it be on their conditioning, like you were mentioning, or whether it be their size, because, you know, quite frankly, the industry right now, I'm surrounded by competitors, which you want to talk about body dysmorphia. I feel like a mess in my own gym some days. But I'm like, geez, no, I'm the fat one. What's going on here? No, but it's one of those things where it's kind of like, you know, you have to take that time off, and you have to decide, do I want to be that really well-conditioned athlete on stage or athlete in my triathlon or in the powerlifting athlete, or do I want to be a rock-solid, huge, strong, full-bellied, muscle, you know, head, huge athlete? And I think that there's nothing wrong with being either one of those individuals, but as long as your mindset matches what you're trying to put out there, that's where the magic happens. Because like you were saying, I mean, the industry can go in either direction. I look at shows all the time and I'm like, wow, you know, where did the Arnold Schwarzenegger days go? You know, what happened to that type of bodybuilding? Why are we looking so lean that you could read a newspaper through someone's skin? Like, what's happening here? You know, and then you have shows where everyone's really small and conditioned and, you know, the biggest guy doesn't win, or vice versa. You know, it's such a mixed bag on where the industry seems to be going because of the natural, non-natural side of things and the multitude of pieces and parts that are associated with, you know, that SARMs. And then you have, you know, anabolics, you got all this different stuff going on. So, I mean, yes. I just looked at her and I'm like, listen, you know, if you're going to compete. So I found myself having the same conversation with Cliff a year and a half ago, right? So he was like, listen, if you're going to do this, then you got to kind of do this. And I'm like, oh, isn't that something? Coach comes right back to you somehow, doesn't it? There you go. All right. Should have texted him a little thank you. He wouldn't know what I was talking about, but I should have done it anyway. So, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit about my past. I mean, I've never gotten on stage. And, you know, honestly, hands down, I just am so completely honored to be around as many pro athletes in the sector on the natural and the NPC crowd. I really am. I just, you know, it's an amazing effort. I've been through the process of the cutting, the strength, the conditioning, the refeed. I've done all of that but step on stage. And, you know, I think it's after these so many years of doing what I've done, I think it's kind of just a clear sign that maybe I should do it. I should just say, you know what? You should just really work on just being strong and animal-like, and that's fine. I don't know if that's what I'm supposed to do, but in the meantime, though, I've really grown in my business because I just actually was announced the USA powerlifting chair for the state of Vermont recently, so that's nice. Fun. That's something new, and I'm working with Willie Wessels and his Vermont rep. Aaron at Atlas in Vermont here, and we're looking at getting our first U.S. Strongman event here as well. So got one going on in June and one going on in the September timeframe. So we've got a lot of hands in the basket. I mean, I've got a lot of plates spinning and working with such a wide array of athletes. So I'm very fortunate to have had, you know, the experiences in the bodybuilding side, but at the same time, I'm just fortunate that I'm like not having another surgery because it seems like every time I try to, you know, bust out the bodybuilding technique ways of training, it's like, oh my gosh, what's happening here? And everyone says to me all the time, people come into the gym all the time. Oh my gosh, do you compete? You look like a bodybuilder. Are you sure you don't compete? Really? You don't really? You should really do it. I'm like, thank you. And they say, you don't understand. I tried. That's what that's about. So tried that 3 meniscus tears later. So, I mean, you know, it's interesting. It's very interesting. I think the my experiences as an athlete have turned me into, I don't know. I don't know if you want to call me a hybrid. I don't know what it would be called. I don't even know if it needs to have a name, but I think I've been able to really touch deeply in each one of the areas, whether they be bodybuilding or functional training or anything as explosive and as strong as U.S. Strongman. So, you know, I'm very fortunate to be where I am and have had the support, you know, of P4P and on that side. And, you know, there's other options out there right now that are kind of like, hey, we really want you to be on board because, you know, you kind of hit it all. You kind of hit all this stuff in here, and your hands are in so many different areas of athleticism. So I'm very fortunate, you know, I'm very fortunate. And yeah, so that's kind of my thing in the long short of it, really. I did have a lot of coffee.
Oh, that's
so
quite
a
the story.
I apologize. I'm like, I'm like 12 okay. shots of espresso a day. The guy at Starbucks thinks I'm crazy, but yeah.
That's okay, because our listeners have definitely been tuning in to what you've been putting down. And actually, we've got several questions that have piled up for us, and I'd like to go ahead and get started with one of them.
Sure.
James wants to know if you run a CrossFit gym or an overall gym.
Well, that's a great question, and I could look at it two ways, but I'm going to answer it directly as possible. I work and I own a fitness facility. So I try to tend to very loosely use the word CrossFit because I don't need to be in litigation on this one. So we do not have a CrossFit box. The CrossFit affiliation is required to, if you are a CrossFit affiliation and you are a CrossFit level coach and you decide to open a facility and offer CrossFit, it has to be CrossFit only. My facility, we are set up for powerlifting. We're set up for strongman, or getting that way, rather. We have an MMA UFC area, and we also have a regular fitness facility. We have our cardio fitness group exercise, you know, and a lot of hammer strength and whatnot in our facility. So we have an actual fitness facility, is what I would call it, that offers functional training, not to be confused with CrossFit.
So your business is pretty much a jack of all trades like you are. I mean, I think, you know, you're wondering, am I a hybrid? What am I? And I would just say, yeah, you're kind of a jack of all trades there on the strength side of it. So we will roll with that.
Yeah, I would have to agree that it's certainly turned into that, you know, now that you mentioned it, I can step off stage and look at it. Yeah, I guess it's definitely turned into being able to offer multiple avenues for people to get fit or change their lives or look at options and goal setting. So, yeah, definitely.
And that's awesome because not one size fits all. So it's always great to be able to have variety and the experience in a lot of different areas. So Lydia would like to know if, since you've been wanting to compete for so long and you've attempted prep so many different times, has it created a greater hunger to get on stage?
That's a great question. And I feel like most people with that, they would have very well become a lot hungrier for the sport. I, on the other hand, what it's done for me is really point me in the direction that I need to be in. And between having, you know, some hip issues and having a lot of knee issues and whatnot, it's literally pushed me in the direction that functional training is definitely where my strengths are. It's where I'm the healthiest. I really have a need to, you know, and when I had spoken to a few friends that actually pointed me in the direction of the Fulson, and one of the things they said was, Jen, I think that he doesn't realize what you do. Like, I think, I don't think he realizes everything that you do because you're in here trying to kill yourself and doing power cleans and having a powerlifting day and then running, you know, sectional bodybuilding type of training the rest of the week. And you wonder why you're just beat. You know, you're not sustaining weight or you're losing weight too fast or whatever. So I would have to say the attempts in being able to be in the stage light, so to speak, whereas quite frankly, I'm very uncomfortable. The idea of like putting a routine together, and even though I did all of that and was ready, it's very uncomfortable for me. I think it's really highlighted where I feel like I'm the most comfortable and where I can really thrive, which would be more on the strength side and the functional training and just really using that total body for my lifts and for my training rather than pushing me further toward the stage, actually.
Well, my question is going to go a little bit back in what you were saying, and that's dealing with the preparation because, you know, there's a lot of things that happen to the body simply because it's being taken care of or not being taken care of. And you know, it sounds like you've been around the business for a while. But, you know, that comes a lot of good information, a lot of bad. Was there some things that you were taught that you learned later that were just a total mistake and, like, damage to your body?
I would have to say that I really was very fortunate to not necessarily have any direction that was negative. I think everything that I've learned from the coaching that I had, in addition to my own knowledge as a sports nutrition specialist, as well as a trainer and whatnot, I think that it really taught me how my body was going to respond. So now, I mean, I could go into a 14-week prep right now and know exactly how my body's going to respond. I know that my body now needs to have less protein than I was putting into it. And, you know, a little bit higher carb, a little bit lower fat. You know, there's certain things about my body now that I know I'll stay injury-free if I can sustain this type of training regimen, the kind of pre- and post-injury prevention with, you know, foam rolling and lacrosse balls and, you know, range of motion mobility in addition to how I'm eating the nutritional pieces of it. Yeah. The lacrosse balls, so. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very firm ball, Kaylin.
You don't want to get hit with one of those. You don't want to get hit with one of those.
No, but they're great for rolling
mark,
man.
They are, and that's a big, huge problem. A lot of those really heavy lifts that I was doing when I was eating like a bodybuilder. So here we go. Right, here's a perfect answer to your question. I was eating like a bodybuilder, training like a functional training athlete. So I was training really hard and really heavy, but I was doing it in an explosive way. So when you're doing power cleans twice a week and you're doing, you know, heavy deadlifts and looking at doing heavy rack pulls in the same week, and you're looking at PRs of 125 and up for strict push presses, you can't eat like a bodybuilder.
That's true.
You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't be depleted and expect to have the performance. And even though I'm the type of athlete that I would continuously push myself to perform, what was happening is I was pushing my body. It was doing what I wanted it to. But at the end of the day, when it came down to it, my muscles were so tight. It was pulling SI joints in one direction. It was tightening up on the IT band. It was doing damage to the medial, the meniscus and the medial tendons in my legs and my knees. My hip flexors were just gone, garbage. So, I mean, I would have to say then, yeah, it definitely taught me a lot about not just reading the books and working with those professional athletes like I have, but experiencing it myself to be able to look at another athlete and say, listen, I'm telling you right now, I know you don't want to do range of motion, and my powerlifters are making 50-plus pound jumps because they're doing the things that I'm teaching them, but it's because I went through that. You know, I know what that physically feels like. You know, so yeah, I would have to say it's definitely been something that's benefited me as a whole in my own personal experience of where I want to go and what I want to do, but it's certainly made me a better coach because I can really relate in so many different ways to how athletes are feeling at different ends of the spectrum.
And that's very important. I mean, you can't beat personal experience, even though some of the personal experience, a lot of the personal experience wasn't necessarily pleasant, but it's definitely given you more insight and more ways to relate and be able to identify what's going on with your client. So, you know, that's a
plus. Absolutely.
The next question I have, I'm going to go ahead and direct to both you and Kaylin to share your feedback, but Tasha wants to know, when we were talking about your training earlier and being so lean, she wants to know that if an athlete gets too lean with competing, is it a sustainable way to go about competing? So that also ties back into the conversation about, you know, conditioning versus size and all of that great kind of stuff.
So I guess, just to be clear, I'm confused on the question. She's wondering, what was the last part of that question again? I'm sorry, I didn't.
She wants to know that if you get too lean with competing, so competing, and you just continue to get leaner and leaner, is that a sustainable way to continue competing?
Oh, I see. I don't know. That question's at both of us. So, do you want to go first on that, or it's up to you?
No, we'll go ladies first.
Okay, sure. So, I think that brings me right back to the topic of. Thank you, by the way. I think that brings it back to the psychological components of training and your weight. So, you know, I tell a lot of my clients, let's worry about body composition. Let's not worry about the scale. I mean, for instance, I'm 5'3", and I'm 145 pounds, and I'm still an extra small. Do you know what I mean? So it's not about the number on the scale. It's about your body composition. So I think that a sustainable weight, any lean, and if we're talking lean, I mean, are we talking 10% body fat? Are we talking 11% body? You know, for women, that also has a big something huge is their age, you know, and what part of their life that they're in. Because I think what happens to a lot of women is they think, well, I'm just going to stay this way all the time, and they end up with they end up with eating disorders, and they end up not being able to function well and not building any muscle. The biggest part for any competitor, in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the biggest piece is when you're done competing, your reverse diet, and there's not many people who do it like exceptional, right? Because we're always so deprived. We want to just eat what we want to eat. But when you reverse diet and you bring that healthy nutrition and that balance back into your normal day to day, you're doing it in a way that you're not going to all of a sudden, if you're doing it properly, gain a bunch of fat to be in an unhealthy weight. So I think that lean and building mass and lean and staying lean are two different things. I don't think staying competition ready, if this is the question, if you're prep ready, competition ready, that is not a realistic time. It is not a realistic mindset that you're going to stay there. Most of these people you see on Instagram, everyone's doing the filters, everyone's pushing up the, oh my gosh, there's a six pack, you can wash laundry on her stomach. There are very few people in this world. Look at some of the biggest competitors. Very few people in this world that sustain that type. And most of the pictures that are being posted are from a competition season. To sustain, you're never going to grow. You're never going to grow. I always tell people, you're never going to get better at something if you don't fail. You have to fail to grow. You have to put on size. You have to put on body fat so your body will produce and make and heal. It'll heal right, one, but two, it'll build new lean, fresh muscle. You have to be able to grease that wheel. You have to be able to put that back in your body. Sustaining a low fat percentage for a long period of time, you're going to do damage to the muscle you have, let alone being able to gain anything else. So, no, I don't think it's realistic to say competition ready. I think a good realistic body fat percentage is based on the woman's age, her activity. There's a number of components to what that looks like. That's why my stuff's individual. But I think that differs for everybody. But competition ready, I do not think is realistic. And I think that's where we end up with that body dysmorphic mindset a lot of times, because we want it to be, because we think we look awesome. You know, but you can't grow from that. You can't grow. You can't grow from that.
Okay.
So,
Finish it.
Oh, I'm good.
Okay. Well, what I was going to add to that, since she covered it so well on that point, the sustainable part, if she was coming from the business side of it, if you were trying to do a good marketing aspect of it, because of the amount of lean that has been winning at shows, like she said, I don't think that they'll be able to go year to year to year and still have that prominent force on stage with that new muscle growth that has been seen and been needed. So if we're talking about sustainable for the competitor, no. I would say never, do you want to look like that all the time. And as for the marketing side of on the business side of natural competitions and bodybuilding, I would say no again, because you can't market the competitors if they're skipping 1 and 2 years, and then you have them on a billboard, and then they're not even in the arena when it comes to the next year's show day. So I think something's going to have to give. Because the one thing that frightens me about the natural community is how lean is too lean when you're stepping on stage. And do we get to the point of such health extreme that we say, you know, this is what – because, I mean, there has to be a point where we have to consider the competitor's health when they're challenging, because the one thing about a competitor is they will push, they will challenge, and they will go that hard. And how much is enough to win, and how much is going too far? And we need to think about these things if we're really considering the health of the competitor, rather than just saying this is the best one that I've put on stage simply because they went the furthest with pushing the limit with their health. Because, you know, everybody's unique. Everybody has a different body type, different metabolism, different structure. And we can't look for that one size fits all. Especially in natural bodybuilding, what I love is that everybody is unique, and you do see unique body types on stage, and I love that aspect of it. So I don't want to see someone trying to look like Kiyoshi Moody every time they step on stage, because Kiyoshi Moody had to be Kiyoshi Moody to look that way. I don't want everybody to be the Martin Daniels, that look. But when he's on stage, I think it should still be respected, because these gentlemen have busted their behinds for, you know, almost 20 years now. So you don't take away from what they're doing because of the new look that's coming in. But you do have to respect the new looks that are coming in, because they're doing it in such good fashion. But I just don't want it to go to the point where the person's health is at risk to basically step on stage for a trophy, especially on the amateur side.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I think that, you know, very good points brought up by both of you, and could carry this conversation on for another half an hour if we had it, but unfortunately we have about 3 minutes. So,
yeah.
Jennifer, I want to say
thank you so much.
It is a great question. And thanks to our listener who asked the question. But Jennifer, I want to say thank you for joining us. And I don't want to be remiss, though. We still have a couple minutes left. If there are some folks out there that you would like to give a shout out to that have been with you, you know, supporting you on your journey, please do that now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my husband has to be the first person, honestly. He's out of 11 years of my life. He's tolerated. We haven't been married that long, but he's tolerated the many, many levels of the psychological components of my training and my life over the years. So he's certainly my first one. And of course, my son would be the second because, quite frankly, he stood at the track up in Lake Placid and froze his little tuchish off when I was sliding for, 3 hours at a time. And he did take some time and have to be dragged along to this event or that event because his mother was competitive and competing and up at the track again. And so, and he spends the time with me in the gym as well as my husband's deployed right now. But and my husband does when he's home too. So they've lived with the day-to-day, the food prep that I still continue to do on a weekly basis. And so they would definitely have to be my biggest fans, my biggest supporters. And of course, the members in my gym, quite frankly, it's an awesome group. I'm very proud and very grateful to be part of the environment that I'm in and very excited, honestly, about what's happening with our facility because we're branching out and touching a whole new level of athlete that this area has ever seen. So I'm very excited to be a part of that. And they're so supportive of my vision that it wouldn't be happening if they weren't. So that would have to be what I say to that. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Awesome. One last question. One really quick last question. P for P protein. What's your favorite flavor?
Snickerdoodle right now.
Yeah.
Snickerdoodle right now.
Yeah.
You know why? I'm telling you, I love it. I can put it in my coffee because I'm a coffee hound.
Right.
I can put it on anything. Anything. I put it in my oats for my pre-workout meal.
I hate to cut this off, but I really do. But we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So, Snickerdoodle. On behalf of myself, Jennifer, Kaylin, and blast it all, Snickerdoodle, and the boys from P.
Snickerdoodle is Snickerdoodle. Yes.
Your body is a temple, so let's build it.
Excellent.